Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. Once again, I'm Trent Kling. Glad to have you with us. Leighton Kling working behind the scenes, as we talked about a little bit in the earlier podcast from this week, as he's had to transition to a more behind-the-scenes role on the podcast. But that being said, super excited about this episode. We're going to talk about home improvement retail, Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace, all releasing earnings this week, all to some varying degrees of excellent success. But perhaps the most exciting part of this episode is our interview segment with Paul Brenner. He's the president of Audio Out of Home and the chief strategy officer at Vibonomics. Vibonomics is a company that partners with a number of retailers, Quick Trip in the C-store segment, Kroger, of course, probably the best known retailer they partner with, but they are responsible for producing the in-store audio feeds. And he's going to talk about what that entails, from selection of the music to selection of even the advertising that will play, and some of the other digital facets that they have going on at Vibonomics that have really, I don't want to say changed the game because that's a cliche, but they have really changed how a lot of companies look at that in-store audio versus those old Mood music systems or the Muzak systems that many retail employees are accustomed to. A quick reminder, you can like us, rate us, however you access us, whether that be on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any one of a number of listening services. You can also check us out on social media, where Leighton helps run our social media feeds at Retail Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. So let's get right to it, and we begin with Home Depot earnings. So we're going to work from Home Depot, and then we'll talk about Lowe's and Ace after the interview segment. There's a couple of reasons these earnings calls from the home improvement retailers are of particular importance. Obviously, we're encouraged to see the numbers and the like, but the calls cover the ever-important late spring and early summer season. These businesses typically see a lot of traffic, particularly in seasonal. So this quarter, the second quarter, is often the most important one for home improvement retailers. Second, these are really the first earnings calls from this segment covering 100% pandemic shopping for all three of these companies. Prior earnings calls covered a month to a month and a half of pandemic shopping, but we can get a complete look inside the traffic trends of all three retailers during the pandemic. As I mentioned, we'll begin with Home Depot. This quarter ran essentially from the beginning of May through the beginning of August. So again, three whole months of buying under pandemic conditions. We previewed Home Depot on Wednesday's podcast. We talked about their record-setting U.S. comp sales. They came out before Ace and before Lowe's did with their earnings. Same-store sales for the second quarter were up 23.4% across the company, but the number that we mentioned on Wednesday that surprised us was the 25% in the U.S. in particular, a 25% increase. Now, the second quarter of 2019 was okay, but not stellar for Home Depot. It wasn't that great for Lowe's either. But still, comps of 25% blew by even our expectations, where we figured they'd come in the high teens, but nowhere near the 25% mark. Now, the increase was a record, as were net sales. Despite this massive jump in comps, though, their earnings didn't quite see that outsized jump we would typically expect when comps go up. In the retail universe, and we had a representative from IBM talking about this very thing a few months ago, basically, any incremental increase in same-store sales is going to produce an outsized increase in earnings per share. At least that's how retail companies are typically set up. That representative from IBM was talking about how he thought that might change in the future. But as far as Home Depot is concerned, net earnings came in at $4.02 per diluted share. That's versus $3.17 per diluted share a year ago. Sums out to an increase of 26.8%. And while this is a big jump, again, typically retailers see larger jumps in net earnings with any incremental gains in comps. But when you look at it, this is another case of a retailer needing to spend a significant amount more money to stay open and operational during the pandemic. For example, in the second quarter alone, they spent $480 million just in additional associate benefits, including those weekly bonuses that they've been giving out. Now, That's just associate benefits. That's not talking about upgrades to the supply chain. That's not talking about switchovers of warehouses, which we'll talk about in a second. It's just employee and associate benefits and bonuses. That comes out to an impact of about 45 cents on a per share basis. So that alone made things a little bit more, you don't want to say difficult for Home Depot because it's a necessary cost, but it did trim down those margins that they were seeing from the increased sales. SG&A also jumped 26% over the year prior. And again, that comes back to the investments Home Depot has made in the back end, not just with salaries, but with infrastructure and supply chain. And although the earnings release itself, the PDF that these companies send out, didn't have many details, the call with CEO Craig Menear and the rest of the company offered some excellent insights. We spoke on the podcast after their first quarter about Home Depot's changes to store hours and elimination of sales to intentionally attempt to keep the traffic numbers low. So those events that they would typically have, especially during March and early April, to drive traffic into the stores, they rolled those back because they didn't want to drive traffic into stores where they were already having to limit the number of customers in stores, either because of local ordinance or because of company mandate. This all continued to some extent from May through early August in the second quarter. They mostly lifted the traffic and hourly restrictions by the end of the quarter. They are localized in some markets where they're keeping the number of people in a store to a certain amount. Most Home Depot locations, though, are now open until 8 p.m. or later, so very close to kind of their actual store hours pre-pandemic. But the one thing that remained the same from quarter to quarter was the continued restriction on traffic-driving events, such as seasonal sales and promotions. The promotions that I talked about that they put on hold in March and April, they continued to be put on hold from May through August. And honestly, this probably helped somewhat on the comp sales front. And what I mean by that is it didn't obviously help their traffic numbers, but they still saw customers flocking through the doors. But they were able to capture greater margins on the seasonal products that were typically marked down in prior years. And this is something that analysts asked about on the call for both Home Depot and Lowe's. And both companies said, yeah, you know, we benefited because we didn't have to have all of those markdowns. We didn't have to have those seasonal pushes to get customers into the store because they were doing that already. So we were able to charge higher prices than what we're typically able to do on certain items. And one item of note was mulch. So in the Colorado markets where I'm at, for example, Home Depot saw no major markdowns on what has become a garden staple. Lowe's and others did kind of work to have weekly sales on mulch, whatever those particular price points might be. Lowe's, typically their mulch sales, 5 bags for $10 or what have you. But this is a drastic departure from prior years because in prior years, you look and Home Depot would often have mulch blowouts on particular weekends, not just one, but a few. And this was a major traffic driver during late spring and summer. And this seems like an absurd thing to point out, but really, if you go to a Home Depot when they are having one of these mulch sales events, you will notice people flocking to the garden center. People are buying pallets at a time in certain circumstances, and it's really bringing customers in through the door and, of course, getting them to buy other merchandise while they're at the Home Depot. Now, another example that they brought up on the call was their annual Memorial Day event, which would have taken place during this quarter. That was canceled altogether out of concern for driving even more customers into those already packed garden centers, into those already packed seasonal areas of the store. All of that said, transactions and ticket size were both up double digits for them in the quarter. Traffic was up 12.3%, so there again, they didn't need these sales necessarily to get traffic up. But ticket size was up 10.1%, and they saw growth across both DIY and professional customers. Now, this indicates a departure from other retailers, particularly general merchandise and grocery retailers who have reported drops in traffic or relative steadiness in traffic, but an increase in ticket size during the same time frame because people are going out less often. In Home Depot's case, everything was up. Traffic was up, ticket was up, and you'll find that was consistent in the home improvement retail industry. Now, e-commerce was, as usual in pandemic times, a major topic on the call. Home Depot saw approximately 100%. So doubling of e-commerce sales, 100% growth year over year, 60% of their e-commerce customers picked up their orders in store, maybe not in store, but parked in the parking stalls outside the store. And this e-commerce flow, and this is what we're talking about with those increased costs, because this doesn't come without a cost. This forced Home Depot to make some decisions in terms of distribution center space. One of the most interesting things that happened with Home Depot in this last quarter is they took a distribution center that was recently opened up, a distribution center that was designed to flow product to stores. They changed that up and created a direct fulfillment center instead. So they retrofitted this newly opened distribution center so that they could fulfill online orders. And they did this because they were seeing lead times regarding direct fulfillment, basically shipped home, increase. Doing this by changing this distribution center to a fulfillment center, this, as expected, did result in a reduction in lead times for customers that use that ship-to-home option. Still, they've experienced the same challenges everyone else has with scaling up buy online, pickup in store, and just dealing with the sheer amount of online traffic. Part of the growth in traffic, they speculate, is as a result of people spending more time at home than ever. All three of these companies, Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace, they all have their internal studies that they're doing, their internal metrics that they're using. Home Depot's internal research is telling them that customers are more willing to work on home improvements than ever as a result of spending more time in the house. This was consistent across all the home improvement retailers. We'll talk about something different that Ace found a little bit later on in the show. But additionally, there might be some evidence of maybe hesitancy among their customers to invite third parties, or those pros, essentially, into their house to work on things. Although, keep in mind, the pro numbers for Home Depot did remain strong. They saw a little bit more momentum in DIY. Did all of this carry over to Lowe's? Well, that's a question we will answer after our interview. Once again, our interview guest, Paul Brenner, the president of Audio Out of Home and CSO of Vibonomics. One of my favorite topics is in-store audio, and we'll talk a little bit about why after the interview, but I think you'll find this incredibly insightful, and some of the things that Vibonomics is doing really changing the game for in-store audio in a way that a lot of retailers haven't yet seen. Although it's something we don't often think about, or at least retail outsiders don't often think about, in-store audio, or a part of what makes up the larger landscape of out-of-home sound, is a key part of each retail store's branding. And while for some retailers, this is somehow an overlooked part of their brand, don't know why that's the case in 2020, many are beginning to wake up to the possibilities of in-store audio, including the prospect of marketing and advertising through these in-store audio channels. Here to discuss not only the landscape of in-store audio, but also potential areas of opportunity on this front for retailers is Paul Brenner. He is the president of out-of-home audio and chief strategy officer at Vibonomics. Vibonomics is a location-based audio out-of-home advertising and experience company who has partnerships with a number of retailers, including a relationship with Kroger that was just announced last month. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Trent. I'm glad to be here.
So first, just to kind of establish for our listeners, how did Vibonomics get its start, and what do you guys do on the day-to-day there?
Yeah, it's an interesting path that we've come from. You know, the founders of this company, that goes back about 3 or 4 years, of which I've been here for a year of that, they created this platform that was in really kind of a premium approach to music and messaging, and that's your legacy, Muzak, Mood Media, other folks that have done it for a long time, 30 years, that came out of a group of guys that owned some retail spaces, were Mood customers, and became frustrated by the kind of lack of quality in that content and a desire to run some ads. And so it was built as a tech platform, really more of a SaaS company in the beginning, highly automated, you know, cloud-driven, location-based devices, you know, real-time content to one or a lot of locations. And I joined the company to help them pivot towards being more of an advertising company. And that's really what we became over the last 12 months. So on a day-to-day basis, you know, we add host networks all the time. Kroger was our biggest yet, but there are many others that have joined us over the last 12 months. Quick Trip is an 800 location C-store out of the Wisconsin or Minnesota area. And so we continue daily to add, you know, premium content, customers, care about their brand, and then ultimately sell the inventory to national advertisers.
And we'll talk about the advertising aspect of it here in just a bit. But first, just pulling back that 10,000 foot view, if you will, how important do you feel in-store audio is to crafting that ideal customer retail experience when someone walks into one of those stores you partner with?
You know, I joined the company after 20 plus years in media entertainment, and there's no medium I ever worked with that didn't first care about the quality of the content and the ratings, right? So what I came into was I felt an industry that in-store audio itself had connotations of elevator music, right? And, you know, really old playlists and bad sound quality and something that did not engage the listener first. And then advertising, we can talk about later. But at a high level, we brought this mentality that Kroger really liked, which is, let's stop playing, you know, Cyndi Lauper and old songs. Let's freshen it up first. Let's get people to say, oh, that's the new song by, you know, Taylor Swift or Justin Bieber, or, you know, it engages them. And the self-promotion is lively and well-produced. You know, I think what has lost its place within store is that it, one, wasn't being paid attention to enough to engage the customers, and two, it was undervaluing itself what the value of those path to purchase customers are. So that's really why I think in-store wasn't working before as well, and really why we've grown so fast, is that we care about brand, we care about the customer experience passionately, and we deliver that to the advertiser through results.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I heard a band called The Brevet, which is a fairly unknown band out of the LA area, in a Kroger store not too long ago. And that's a major change from the Cyndi Lauper and company, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You should follow us on Twitter through Kroger, because we get a lot of comments now about, oh man, Kroger stepped up their game. I just heard, you know, such and such, you know. So it's a pretty fun thing to see that feedback from people that do listen.
Now, on the technical side of things, you know, I remember working at a retailer where they were running the same Muzak DVD basically for the 5 years prior. How has the technical side of things changed in terms of being able to change things up in real time, as you mentioned?
Trent, we when we replace current providers, we've pulled out cassette machines, we've pulled out DVD players, we've pulled out things where they still get a CD shipped to them once a month. And we replace that with a really smart device. And we use tablets today. We're moving towards our own version of a box. And it's really just a very sophisticated piece of equipment that is in constant communication with our cloud service. So, I mean, a big difference is the ability to send the content down, meaning if we're managing, you know, 2,000 Kroger stores, we can sit in one place and control everything about exactly what song is playing in the moment, what promotion is playing in the moment, what advertising is playing in the moment, and it can be changed right there in real time. And the device itself has the intelligence to either change advertising by the second or cache that and play it if it should go offline. So that's the tech of delivering it, but the underlying piece is that those are all GPS-enabled devices. So when you get into the world of advertising and targeting, DMA-driven buying decisions, the natural thing is for our retailers and our inventory to be sliced and diced and viewed in the same ways that they target locations of people and other things. It's within the same methods and processes they use. And that's a really big differentiator for us on the ad side.
So I do want to pivot to the advertising part of it. What goes into curating not just an ad lineup for a particular store, but also the music lineup as well when you sit down with that store's leadership?
Yeah, so we ask what their branding guidelines are. What do they want it to sound like that aligns with that brand interest? In Kroger's case, they shared their branding guidelines with us. They had a section on audio that was typically being applied to other mediums, so we adjusted to that. We look at the store traffic. We analyze data through SafeGraph on demographics, you know, aligning types of music playlists with the type of audience. Is it younger? Is it older? Is it more male? Is it more female? Is it more Hispanic? Is it more, you know, so on and so forth. And then we build the playlists on a day part basis around the interest of the brand and the interest of the type of customer that's in the store. And I'll give you an example. Kroger's was very specific about the kinds of music they wanted us to play. They wanted it to be upbeat. They wanted it to be animated, but not on the point of the nose. So not what you would say is like a movie theme song, but more upbeat type of music, kind of fun music. And then we take that and then apply it to, there's a, you know, typically an older audience in the middle of the day. So we adjust for that. We don't want to do too much that might lose their attention. And the Friday evening hours, we're obviously a little more poppy, a little more younger. So that's kind of the way we approach it.
So looking back at the advertising part of it, you know, it's interesting because you've essentially got a captive audience there in the store. So what are some idiosyncrasies or specialties of in-store audio advertising that allow it to be particularly effective on the whole?
I mean, there's two sides to the answer to that question. One is along the path to purchase, you know, anyone selling products, any brand selling products in that store has a journey that they feel like they've planned, right? So they have approached that audience with that product along television, along social media, along streaming audio, along, you know, in-car listening, and they have a message they want to end that with, and that is to reach the person that's closest to the product. So, you know, the people are in that store, you want to get their attention with good content, a good ad, and you want to drive them towards awareness or towards an action, right? Like, hey, you're in the store, and have you thought about picking this up today? Or even more specifically, here's a deal that you didn't know you could get, like a scan down, right? A 2-for-1 or a discount or something like this. So we work with those brands around who that audience they want to reach, where the products are specifically. So if we're doing a product sale that's only sold in these, say, 100 stores, we figure out what those 100 stores are, and that's the only place those ads run, right? So there's no wastage on the investment. And then we create content that's contextual. So we have a thing called Vibonomics Creative Studios that every major brand and agency that we work leverages. Because they say, if you know how to speak to the audience in store, then we trust you. And so they typically, again, they give us branding guidelines. They talk about the product and the persona of the brand. And then we recommend copy that would be not too specific, Trent, not like, hey, go to this aisle and this, you know, shelf. But we try to use context of speaking to a person where they stand, right? And introduce some type of personality that connects with them. And then, you know, talk about thing that's local, talk about why, you know, you might want to, you know, it's this silly thing like, hey, you see that guy just passed you in the grocery cart that had such and such product in his shelf? That's because he's going to a great party tonight. And, you know, and so you get the point, right? It's really about being contextual, but not too specific.
So you hit on something that I wanted to discuss a little bit about because, you know, again, you look 15, 20 years ago, you had these product-based announcements and it was really just whichever associate was nearest to a telephone and they were like, you know, on aisle 8, you know, check out this special on t-shirts or what have you.
Sure.
But your creative process goes a lot deeper than that. It's almost as though, you know, you're doing an ad buy for radio. So what's the genesis been like in terms of developing that creative process to create that compelling advertising audio where the customer doesn't feel like they're just being talked at?
Yeah, it's really been a fun thing that we've evolved through. In the early days, like I said, we were a premium music message content. We had an app that we would put in the hands of a retailer. Let's say it was a company that owned, you know, 50 trampoline parks, right? In the early days, we had a one that had like 300. And we put an app in their hand and then they could push a button and talk and say, hey, such and such available today, and you know, pizzas are $5 or whatever, right? And they would use their messaging, the feel of them being in the store with you, just like you said. And they could push play, and within a second, it would literally come, it would go to their cloud and then come back out and play in their speakers. And they could put that anywhere they wanted. And so what we did is we watched that, and we watched the kinds of requests that were coming into us. And we learned about how our creative team and our script writers were morphing that message and, you know, making it more creative and making it more contextual. So we are taking cues from them, but then on the fly, making it more professional, better background music, right? So we were kind of professionalizing it and putting context to it. And what we learned over time is we need to stop letting them do that because it really, in the end of the day, it didn't sound very good. But what that process created is what we have now, which is we ask the right questions of the brand that wants to advertise. We know what the brand guidelines are of the retailer and the audience that they have in the store. And we write that. We try out multiple voice talent, male, female, different cultural ethnicities, depending. And then we let the advertiser listen to that and say, does this match your interest? And so it's more like a creative agency approach. And we've just continually improved that. And it's been great. I mean, it actually has achieved greater and greater results on things like Lyft and ROAS because we have the customer engaged generally. And then we write better creative, fun stuff like joking around with people and, you know, like, hey, you in line at the whatever, you know, have you thought about this today? And kind of mentally cueing people. And we've just gotten better results with that. We're still improving upon it. I wouldn't say we've got it completely figured out, but we're making a difference with it.
So you mentioned earlier, one of the things that your platform is capable of doing is changing the advertising and the information rotation based on things that are specific to that local store. Like one of the things that your website mentions is the weather, for example. How does that customization work to kind of loop everything into where things can be changed? Obviously, you don't have someone sitting there pushing buttons and changing things manually. So how does all of that work to bring it into that system?
Yeah, I think that the secret to that has been the fact that our tech is so automated and advanced that we can comply with the programmatic standards, right? So, you know, digital out of home has been around for about 10 years now. And, you know, the last five have been really important. But, you know, we partnered with Vistar Media, announced that in June. And we, because of the design of our technology, we can be part of Vistar Media's SSP and DSP. And what that means is, you know, we have the ability to take inventory and assign it to agencies and advertisers where they can be flexible on their own. And they can look at the planning tools within, say, Vistar's DSP that say, hey, let's do this by weather. Let's do this by foot traffic levels. Let's look at demographics, et cetera. And they can effectively choose how they want that to be run. And our system is so automated, you know, if somebody dropped an ad into a system that said, hey, we found out it's going to be snowing in 4 hours in these markets, and I want to put some creative in there that has a product that takes advantage of that change. Our system just says, okay, you know, within seconds, we're checking in. If you wanted to change your ad, we'll change the ad and we'll play the new one. And so I think that's really the biggest difference is the competitors that we've kind of overtaken and are starting to, you know, win business away from are not programmatic. And that's a big part of answering the question that you posed.
There are some stores and some chains, and fairly large chains, in fact, who have made maybe a conscious decision to omit audio altogether from their store experience. From your perspective, what would be your message to them about the importance of in-store audio, not only in terms of maybe framing the brand, but also in terms of, as we've talked about a little bit, driving sales?
Yeah, I think on the first part of the question is, it kind of shocks me, and I'm sure you feel the same way, is, you know, the brick and mortar war is not new, right? I mean, retailers have been trying to deal with the online buying and the Amazon effect for a while now. And so it's often perplexing to me as to why a retailer would not do everything they can to make that in-store experience as enjoyable as possible. And, you know, this isn't difficult to do. It's something that's not a $1 billion investment. You know, it's something that can be a pretty light touch investment and make it so that when the people come in their store, there's an instant emotional, psychological reaction. That's what Kroger wanted. That's what we delivered for them. That's what a lot of our customers want. So first, I guess, you know, why wouldn't you want to have that customer experience be as good as it can be? And music is one of those things that just instantly changes the gratification. So that's the first part. On the second part, you know, our business model is that we want to have premium content, but we are an advertising company. So we want to generate the majority of our revenue from ad dollars. And we want to share that with the retailer. We want them to enjoy a new revenue stream to replace what was historically a cost center. We do that over and over now without fail. And we do believe, and we know through our testing, that the advertisers benefit by seeing a lift in the investment they made. And we see the retailer benefiting from, you know, pushing more product. And, you know, that's their benefit. We don't ask for the money that they generate on the positive. That would be just suicide for us. But we do share the revenue back from the ad dollar. So it's really becomes kind of a three-way win. We see that more and more, particularly with renewals. The retailer benefits, they get to carry a product they weren't seeing come down the pipe before because the advertiser's interested. Or, you know, they're selling more of one brand where they were kind of seeing flat sales, right, in a category. That's really the interesting part, is it benefits the retailer and the advertiser. And that might even be part of the answer to you, the answer to the first part of the question too, right? Is first customer, second, why not create a new revenue stream from it?
Absolutely. Now, to finish up, I think you could make a very real argument that Vibonomics platform is the future of in-store audio. But beyond that, what are some things that maybe haven't come across our radar yet that might be involved in the future of in-store audio?
I probably don't want to open the playbook too much. We're definitely trying to build on what we've done. You know, we feel like programmatic is table stakes. We did it because we could, and it opens up inventory and accessibility to companies that really never thought about it before. But, you know, there's things we're doing in the future with data that is going to be game changing, no different than what digital out of home did. And obviously location-based, mobile, all of them went through an evolution of where they were viewed as a pioneer, and then it existed, and then it had to be improved upon, right? And so that's what we'll do in the future. We're also starting some really interesting things that have come our way around music. You know, we have 200 million monthly unique visitors. That's six times the size of Pandora's reach. And, you know, I think that in line with the fact that we care about the music has attracted the attention of some musical content providers, some labels. And so we're not sure where that goes yet, but we definitely want this to be, you know, something that doesn't just a playlist. We want it to be something that is also evolving and improving. And, you know, access to those kinds of forward thinkers is what's going to change that experience even for the better.
That's fantastic insight. I'm looking forward to the day where a Taylor Swift song is released exclusively for in-store audio.
I love that idea. We should chase that down. I appreciate that.
We need to make that happen. All right. Well, once again, Paul Brenner, the president of Audio Out of Home and CSO of Vibonomics, thank you so much for joining us. It's been fun.
Yeah, Trent, it's really, I enjoyed your questions and looking forward to getting a listen.
So we thank Paul once again for joining us on the show. You know, one of the interesting things regarding in-store audio, and I've always taken an interest in it, certainly, but I mentioned during that interview that marketing, or basically those digital ads, used to just be an associate picking up the phone and talking into the loudspeaker. And so a little bit about my background, a lot of regular listeners know that I, at one point in time in my retail career, worked at Kmart. And this was right around the time they were running the Blue Light is Back promotion. So they brought the Blue Light Special back after it had been gone for about 15 years. They hauled all of that equipment out of storage. In our cases, Blue Light and this light fixture had been sitting in storage for about 15 years. So we had to dust it off, bring it back out. But they needed an associate to make the announcements and say, attention Kmart shoppers, you know, there's a Blue Light Special on X, Y, or Z. And while I was working at Kmart, I was also working part-time at a radio station, and they found out that I had some radio experience. So it was a lot of fun for me because I got to make the Blue Light Special announcements over and over again. But one of the things that was interesting to me is even when Blue Light Specials weren't going on, we were just instructed simply on the front end, whoever was the front end supervisor was instructed just to pick out a random item in the ad and read about it. And that was the extent of the digital advertising that took place at Kmart. And as we talked about, there's some retailers that don't even use audio. So I guess using an associate to make an announcement about a special or something like that would be a step up. But when you go to a Kroger now, or any Kroger affiliate, I encourage you to listen for those digital ads. So much different than what you would see of yesteryear. And it's really a great option for not only the company to bring in what is a non-traditional retail revenue stream, so it's another place you can garner revenue is from these advertisements, but also move product off the shelves. You get the benefit when you can move product off the shelves. And it's a win-win-win, as Paul talked about, because it's something where you have a captive audience, you have someone that's already shopping there. And several times, I can't say every time I go to the store, but several times, I'll listen to an in-store announcement and say, you know what, I didn't think about that coming to the store, but I do need that product. Now, there's a difference there between, obviously, what you see with the in-store audio and the influx of customers, of course, shopping e-commerce channels and the buy online, pick up in store channels. And that's what Paul was getting at. If you can make the in-store experience enjoyable, if you can make that audio experience more enjoyable where you get past that elevator music ideal, then suddenly you've got another reason. Maybe it's a subconscious one, but it's another reason for people to go out and go to the store. So overall, a very interesting concept that Vibonomics has. And it's good to see some things that have been happening in radio and television and other forms of media happening with in-store audio as far past time. So a great interview. Once again, we thank him and Vibonomics for making him available, and hopefully we can check back with them at a future date. Now, as we promised before the interview, we're going to talk about Lowe's and Ace. Now, Lowe's released earnings one day after Home Depot. Believe it or not, Lowe's blew Home Depot's growth numbers away. And if you've paid any attention to retail media, you kind of probably have heard about some of the numbers, but Home Depot, again, saw 25% comp increases in the U.S. They had their numbers blown away by Lowe's. This signifies to me an important moment for Lowe's because they've been able to seize this opportunity to take back market share from Home Depot. And we've heard from a number of Lowe's associates at different levels of the company that they were seeing massive momentum. The numbers certainly bear this out. And as an aside, some of the associates that we've talked to are particularly proud of their more streamlined throughput in comparison to Home Depot. This is a point of pride for Lowe's, saying we've got that throughput down. We had it down earlier than Home Depot did. Home Depot, if you went there during the height of the pandemic, sometimes it could be a bit of a mess in terms of customers coming in and out. Again, they've moved primarily to a self-checkout mode, and Lowe's has been internally impressed with the ability that they have to move customers through their stores and do it cleanly and consistently. Now, whether customers will be impressed by that will be something that'll maybe bear out on future earnings calls. But for this earnings call, Lowe's comps in the U.S. came in at a 35.1% increase, more than we could have ever expected from a non-grocery retailer during these 3 months from, again, May through the beginning of August. Not only did Lowe's see this massive jump, but all merchandising divisions posted comp growth of over 20%, meaning basically everything in the store was flying off shelves. There was nothing left out of this. This compares to Home Depot, where 13 of 14 categories saw a double-digit increase. So we're talking about categories seeing a double-digit increase at Home Depot, one category not seeing a double-digit increase in comps. Lowe's, everything comped out above 20% at least. That is mind-blowing. And there weren't too many details about this on the call itself. Not a lot of questions asked about this. Most of the analyst questions on the call were about margins and margins going forward. But lumber, tools, and paint, they said, all comped over 30% due to an uptick in DIY customer sales. A slight uptick in pro customer sales in this category, mostly DIY customers. Kind of goes back to what Home Depot was finding. Additionally, they noted that lawn and garden, that ever important seasonal category, comped above company averages too. That's so important because shrink is a big burden in terms of lawn and garden. Now, most companies have it to where they at least get some credit back or even cash back on things like dead or dying plants, but it's still so important when you can get those plants to fly off the shelves and you don't have to worry about those credits or those returns back to the distributor. And for Lowe's, all of their U.S. regions posted comps of greater than 30%, which means despite the localized pandemic effects we've discussed with researchers on the show in the past, where certain regions are more heavily affected than others by sales, Lowe's is succeeding no matter where the stores are located geographically. So that is huge for them. Now, because their cost of sales and SG&A increase less proportionately to sales than it did for Home Depot, basically they were able to keep costs in check a little bit better than Home Depot was, Lowe's saw a greater percentage jump in diluted earnings per share. They went from $2.14 last year, $2.14 per share, to a whopping $3.74 per share this year. Marvin Ellison has got to be smiling about that. Lowe's was able to scale up traffic and ticket in a way that was somehow more efficient than Home Depot. And honestly, this is likely because if you look at Lowe's in the past, they were kind of underperforming based on costs earlier. Their margins weren't as great as Home Depot, so they had a bit of a higher ceiling in terms of being able to manage additional traffic and take on those additional sales. So they had a ceiling both in terms of in-store staffing, but also in terms of their supply chain. Now, as far as a traffic and ticket breakdown for Lowe's, they saw double-digit comps in both, just like Home Depot, but the numbers much, much bigger for Lowe's. Transactions were up a mind-blowing 22.6%, meaning that despite pandemic conditions, despite limitations on the number of customers in a store at any one time in certain markets, their traffic actually substantially increased over the year prior. 22.6%. That's more than any other retailer we've seen during April through August, even a lot of grocers that are out there. Average ticket was up 11.6%. Lowe's.com, you talk about their e-commerce site, outpaced HomeDepot.com in terms of sales growth as well, with Lowe's sales growth coming in at 135%. And it was all ticket sizes that saw an increase. When you break down sales by ticket size, sales over $500 increased 24.3%. Now, sales for Home Depot of over $1,000 also saw a double-digit increase, but nowhere near that. And sales from $50 to $500 at Lowe's saw the biggest increase, with the number of transactions in that range increasing 43.5%. If you break it down month by month, they did see the largest flush of traffic in May. Comps were up 41.5% in May. That compares to 0.7% in May of 2019 over May of 2018, but the momentum continued in June, saw comps come in at 34.4% increases, and July, which was 28.2% increases. Company says so far in August, there is no reason to expect a slowdown, seeing it very much in line with July. Now, regarding those online sales, they came along with an increased number of downloads for their mobile app, and this is something that most retailers have mentioned. The mobile apps are getting downloaded more often, but more importantly for Lowe's, they've seen an uptick in the positivity of customer ratings of the app. And this is crucial to note for Lowe's because we've discussed in the past about the perceived wonkiness of both the Lowe's website and the app. And if Lowe's is pushing customers to the app for the first time due to the pandemic conditions, it's important that those customers are impressed on the first go. And from those ratings numbers actually going up versus pre-pandemic conditions, they have been. Now, looking ahead, Lowe's is particularly excited about the addition of two brands in the second half of 2020. Brands are big in this space. I probably don't have to tell you that, but these companies, between Lowe's and Home Depot and Ace and True Value and Menards, they all battle to gain some sort of brand exclusivity. And one of these brands that Lowe's is adding is exclusive. They've won the rights to EGO's battery-powered outdoor equipment, and this is something that William Bolts on the earnings call for Lowe's, their executive vice president of merchandising, was really excited about in talking about the EGO brand, because they've seen a definite push by the DIY customer to seek out battery-powered outdoor equipment in general. So here they're able to capture an exclusive brand in this segment that happens to be doing really well for them. No reason to not be excited about this. Home Depot, by the way, announced no exclusive brand acquisitions during this call. The addition of the EGO brand, again, exclusivity, super important in the home improvement space, something they feel will trigger sales increases in outdoor equipment during a time you don't really see increases in outdoor equipment because the deal kicks in December 2020. In addition, they've reached a deal to begin carrying select Skill battery-powered outdoor equipment in late 2020 as well. That deal, not necessarily exclusive, but Lowe's admitted to benefiting from the lack of promotional activity as Home Depot did and as we mentioned earlier, although as we noted, they've at least put on a few more promotions than Home Depot did. So we talk about all of this. Where does that leave Ace? And although Ace is privately held, they did release numbers for their second quarter this week. We postulated last week that they may be well positioned to see an uptick in sales equal to or greater than Lowe's and Home Depot, given the trends that have been noted of people wishing to make quicker trips out of their home. When you go to an Ace store, you're looking at a store that might be anywhere from 10,000 square feet to 30,000 square feet. Some are a little bit larger, some are a little bit smaller, but that makes for a quicker trip than going to a Lowe's or a Home Depot where it's over 100,000 square feet and it's easier to get around and easier to find things more quickly, especially if you just need one or two things. So we speculated that Ace could see a benefit from that. Additionally, Ace seemed to ramp up preparations for pandemic retail sales more quickly than other retailers. We talked about this back in March. Many of their locations were already installing shields and social distancing markers before even grocers got on board. And Ace, when you get to the numbers, indeed beat Lowe's on the comp sales front in the U.S., albeit only slightly. Their comps were up a crazy 35.3%. AceHardware.com revenues up 493%. Now, something we've talked about regarding Ace in the past, their e-commerce site is a bit less mature than Lowe's and Home Depot going into the pandemic, but love to see those quick increases and love to see them keeping up with those increases too. Now, overall revenue was up 35.1%, leading to record second quarter net income of $138.9 million. That's an increase of over 150% last year. And when you consider this was one of our top five retailers on our list for 2019, that really stands out. Ace getting the job done during the pandemic in a time that their CEO called the most challenging the company has perhaps ever seen, but maybe the most rewarding when it's all said and done that the company has seen. Now, we should note that not all Ace retailers share their daily sales numbers with Ace. About 3,200 of the overall 4,500, a little over 4,500 U.S. stores do share their daily sales numbers. So you're getting about three quarters of the stores wrapped up in these numbers. And it's reasonable to say that other Ace stores probably saw similar numbers in terms of traffic and sales. But it is something I did want to note in the interest of full transparency. Now, as with their bigger box brethren, or their cousins, if you will, Ace benefited from both an increase in transactions and average ticket. Theirs was a bit more even between the two versus Lowe's. Traffic was up 14.4%, so not quite as much as Lowe's, but average ticket was up 18.2%. Additionally, when you break down the types of customers that Ace sees, far more of Ace's customers are DIYers rather than pro customers. Their internal metrics bear out that the increases that they saw in comps, distinct result of more people embarking on home improvement projects while being at home, while sheltering in place. They also show that more customers have moved their spend, based on their research, from travel and entertainment into home improvement. So people that were otherwise spending on summer vacations or going to the movies were pouring that money into fixing up their homes, and Ace was a direct benefactor of this, again, according to their own research. Now, traffic, particularly e-commerce traffic, was driven by new customers in the second quarter rather than existing customers simply massively increasing their number of visits. They got a lot of new customers, especially to acehardware.com. By the way, one thing I did want to mention, Ace got all of this done. These massive comp numbers got done while being unable to capitalize, at least in many locations, on inflation in lumber. Now, some Ace locations, particularly in rural areas, do have lumber yards. Most Ace locations, especially urban ones, do not have lumber sales. And for perspective, lumber inflation positively impacted Home Depot's ticket size by 61 basis points. So Ace, not able to take advantage of the lumber inflation like their cousins, still able to put up these numbers, which to me makes them even more impressive. All of these sales have had a spillover effect to the company's plans for expansion, where some retailers are halting expansion plans out of concern for pandemic-related impacts. Ace is accelerating theirs, at least on the warehouse front. They were planning on adding to their overall distribution center capacity anyhow over the next few years, but they now plan on adding over 1 million square feet of warehouse space between now and next August. This marks a far more abrupt upscaling of their distribution centers, or as they call them, retail support centers, versus what was originally planned. They also added 5 new stores net of what they call cancellations in the quarter. And remember, Ace is really an agreement-based retailer, so oftentimes, with the exception of Westlake and a few other stores, Ace stores are not corporate-owned. They're locally owned by essentially a franchisee or co-op member in Ace's case. So when we talk about closures, it's really Ace canceling a store agreement with a local owner. And sometimes it's a local owner transitioning from Ace to True Value. It's not a true closure for them. But as far as Ace is concerned, they're out of the pipeline, which is why Ace is kind of difficult to project new store openings for them that aren't corporate stores or the Westlake stores. But still, you can tell with Ace hurrying up these distribution center plans, things are looking good for them, and they're expecting to add more stores to their pipeline in the near future.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We've reached the final segment of the Retail Focus podcast, a segment we've always called Looking Ahead. And in this case, what we're looking ahead to is holiday sales. And granted, the prospects for holiday sales are all over the place. We've seen numbers suggesting maybe a 30% decline in holiday sales. We've seen others indicating not as much of a decline in holiday sales because there might be some pent-up money or pent-up funds once people are able to spend. But one of the major things I'm looking ahead to this holiday season is how retailers will pace out their retail sales. For example, some retailers have talked about moving some of their holiday sales, Kohl's included, Best Buy, Target also with this list, into October. And part of this is being done not just to ease in-store traffic concerns, but to ease logistical concerns. Now, you think about what's been in the news, especially over the last month or so, the post office, USPS being in flux and having difficulty delivering packages, letters, and the like on time. The more retailers decide to go with UPS and FedEx, the more stress it's going to place on those logistics companies as well. The trickle-down effect is this. If you have retailers promoting same-day or next-day delivery through third-party options, like, for example, Shipt, which Target owns, then you have to scale up there. So ultimately, it becomes a domino effect. If you take one thing out of the equation, or at least partially out of the equation in the Postal Service, you place a big burden around holiday shipping to those other carriers. And by the time December rolls around, we don't know what shipping is going to look like in the U.S., whether it will be even worse than what it is now, where packages in some cases are taking 7 to 8 days after shipping to reach their final destination if you're the Postal Service. So the reason I'm looking ahead is how are retailers going to spread out their sales, but also this. We've noted in the past that last-minute shoppers, and there are still many of them out there, tend to prefer to do their shopping over the last couple of weeks in store because of the uncertainty surrounding shipping. Is that uncertainty more or the same this year? If it's more this year, we actually might see in-store transactions maybe not go up versus what we saw last year for certain retailers, but at least stay relatively steady, as those last-minute shoppers might be distrustful of those logistics companies to get the job done. And also, will some of the companies, like who we talked about, Target, Walmart, and so forth, the ones that are relying on those either internal services or external third-party services to get the job done, will they have a leg up on some of the other retailers? You know, we talked about Home Depot, the lead time's still pretty big on Home Depot things, especially things like appliances, which families do tend to ramp up on once the holidays get here because they want that new oven to be able to cook Thanksgiving dinner or what have you. So how does this affect all of the retailers out there? Will we see spread out sales for the holiday season? Will we see them condensed? We know we won't see Black Friday in store like we once did, at least in the numbers that we once did for certain stores. But how does the black cloud hanging over the shipping industry right now play into holiday sales this year? That's what I'm looking ahead to for this episode. Now, in the shorter term, I am looking ahead to a series of fantastic interview guests We'll have two episodes coming up next week, the first of which will be on Wednesday, and we'll talk with Oracle's Carla Anderson about inventory and inventory management. Oracle does a lot of work behind the scenes on inventory management. Excited to have Carla on. And then we'll talk to Paul Lee. Paul Lee is the CEO of NHN Global, which is the parent company to Fashion Go. Fashion Go is hosting a massive online trade show where typically fashion trade shows are in person. It's going to be online. He's going to talk about some of the interesting aspects of making a trade show digital, especially when you've got 420,000 retailers that are going to be involved in the trade show. So a couple of great interviews coming up the week after that. So looking forward to next Wednesday, we've got an interview lined up to talk about the luxury retail space and how the pandemic has affected luxury retail and how luxury retailer customers have been more willing to shop online rather than in person because of pandemic-related conditions. So three great interviews lined up over the next three episodes, and I certainly hope you'll tune in. Well, big thanks to you for listening. A big thanks to Paul Brenner for joining us once again, president of Audio Out of Home and CSO of Vibonomics. For everyone behind the scenes, so long until Wednesday, the next episode of the Retail Focus Podcast will hit your podcast listening service.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.